Anything Combat with Johnny K.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat show, where we discuss everything mixed martial arts and fitness. I'm your host, Johnny K. And today, we've got a biohacker on the show. He's an athlete, coach. He's the co-founder of Unmatched Supplements, co-founder of Getin Gyms franchise. Please welcome to the show, Chris Getin. How are you, Chris?
I'm great, buddy. How are you doing, my man? You just woke up.
Well, what I did is I stayed up from, I think I woke up lunchtime, and then I stayed up the whole day. And then knowing that we had this meeting, I was feeling good. I had a whole bunch of caffeine, circadian rhythm off the chart. I went, you know what? I'm going to do the podcast at 6 a.m. in the morning, and just the next time zone, next day, and then I'm going to sleep after. So that's the amount of dedication I'm under right now.
I don't know if that's good for you, man. I think you're burning the candle at both ends. I appreciate it. I'm honored that you would do such a thing, but you need to prioritize yourself and not me, man.
That is so true. And I told my friend Div that. He's also a massive fan of you. And he also has a question for you. So I'll just go into that to start us off today. So Div, my friend, he runs a clinic in Melbourne, Australia called Grit Physio and Podiatry. And his question for you is, he knows that you've dealt with a whole bunch of athletes, a whole bunch of celebrities. He wants to know who had the most difficult, out of all the celebrities, who had the most difficult training regimens when it comes to injuries?
It'd be an Indian celebrity that I worked with called Hrithik Roshan, because I don't think I've dealt with so many injuries in my life. And it's not because he's an athlete. I feel that he was born with a lot of this. He didn't play school sports in school because he was dealing with a lot of injuries at that time. And I feel it's like his tendons and ligaments, it's like they're not tight enough for his frame. It is so weird. Like, he could be walking through an airport and his knee will give out, you know, because he's not conscious. He's not focusing on his gait. Where, of course, when you're in the gym, you're usually present, you're focused on your form, etc. So there's never so many issues there. So I'd say it's definitely him. He's got a very small frame, very full muscle bellies, and he's quite strong. So it just puts a lot of strain onto his skeleton.
Is that true that he had to warm up for 30 minutes before your training sessions with him?
Occasionally, not all the time. Sometimes it's, you know, 30, 40 minutes just to activate the muscles. But other times it could be just get straight into it. You know, every day is different and you have to go instinctively by it. You know, it's like sometimes you go to the gym, you feel strong, you're going to hit your personal best. Other times you're like, no, I'm not going to do free weights today. I'm just going to stick to the cables or machines and do higher reps and higher intensity because that's what it calls for on the day. Sometimes you just got to walk into the gym and smell the air and decide what to do following.
Chris, my favorite part of your content creation is definitely the hormone optimization stuff and the biohacking. So I want to ask you, when did you first come across this? When did you first kind of take a liking and an interest into testosterone optimization, cortisol, and human growth hormone?
Well, it's not just that. I guess I went down a rabbit hole when I was diagnosed with mold toxicity. I'd had mold toxicity for several years, but I wasn't diagnosed correctly until 2014. And that's when I realized, okay, there's a whole lot of things here that I don't really understand. Even though I've been in the fitness industry and qualified as a personal trainer since the mid-90s, I'd competed in drug-free natural bodybuilding in Australia, in the US, in the UK, in Canada, and I thought I knew everything, but I obviously didn't. And when I got diagnosed with that mold toxicity and found out that there was mold in grains, there was mold and mycotoxins in coffee and a whole lot of other things, that's when I really started looking to food groups and, you know, wild caught food, organic, grass-fed, and the difference between your factory farm stuff. And that's when I really looked into optimizing my own natural free testosterone levels, my own natural growth hormone levels, you know, in helping my circadian setting. You know, realizing that the power is all in recovery and optimizing my recovery, because that would then dictate my performance.
Chris, you just said that you're in the natural bodybuilding shows. A lot of people, you know, on your comment section and a lot of shit talkers online, they call bullshit on fake natties and stuff, and they say people on steroids. So have you ever done any of that stuff?
No. Yeah, of course I've thought about it. I think I thought about it the first time was probably about 2005 to no, maybe 2006, 2007. You know, I felt that I'd gone as far as I could naturally, and I thought, well, do I want to take it to the next level? But the one thing I've really enjoyed is being like a hybrid athlete. I like competing in Ironman triathlon. I like competing in ultramarathon or Spartan or other things outside of the gym. And, you know, after, you know, I remember competing in my very first show, which was a year and a half after I'd picked up a weight. And everyone, well, my picture was in the local newspaper because I got second in a show that was untested because I had no idea there was such a thing as drug-free bodybuilding and obviously enhanced bodybuilding. I just didn't know. I was very naive back then. And everyone thought I was on drugs then, you know, and that was a year and a half after picking up a weight. So, of course, it's just got worse. And then with the exposure of social platforms, everyone calls out, you know, your success because of their inadequacy. They're just justifying their own incompetence because they live under very short ceilings. And I was one of those people. When I competed in my first natural bodybuilding show, it was in Sydney, Australia. I went and watched a natural show first, and there was a guy called Mark Costanti. He was the Australian champion. And I was in the front, in the crowd, thinking, there is no way in hell that guy is natural. He was shredded, veins all over his abs, like separated, diced, and very, very defined. He ended up being my training partner, and that's when I realized, okay, there's levels to this stuff. And he had a very high ceiling above his thought process. And then I trained with another natural Olympian called Danny Chow in Australia. And that made me realize, okay, there's just levels to this shit and I need to level up. You know, when someone says, hey, you're on steroids, that's a compliment, man, because that tells me that I'm achieving something that they can't.
Chris, when did you live in Sydney?
2000 to 2005.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. But, you know, I owned a gym. It was called Future Physique. Half of it was MMA, well, Muay Thai. So I taught Muay Thai for several years. That was half of it. And the other half was personal training. I loved it, but then I started writing for publications and my content started to get published worldwide. And that's when I realized, okay, I can reach out to a lot more people doing this and just in my gym. So that's when I decided to move to the US and get a contract with Weeder Publications, writing for them first full time.
I didn't know that about your Muay Thai training. So when did you first start in your Muay Thai?
That was 2001. It was halfway through 2000. And then I started doing that pretty much full-time from 2003 to 2005.
Do you enjoy your martial arts?
Love it. Absolutely love it. So I just come back from Thailand. We were doing Muay Thai all the time there. And then in India, I was doing it all the time there up until recently. And now we've just joined another MMA studio here, which we'll just focus mostly on Muay Thai. I prefer the stand-up game.
There's a lot of people listening to this right now that are MMA enthusiasts, they train or they love to listen to stuff, right? And I think that what would be important with your expertise to talk about for MMA is the fact that fighters, they stress a lot. They're actually a stressful bunch and also they're in a high stress environment. So with your expertise, what do you think they need to do from a hormonal perspective to cut down on that cortisol in the MMA?
So there's a lot of things, and some of it will come across as being very woo-woo. You know, I've trained some MMA fighters, a couple of the guys in the UFC, and in all honesty, this is going back a few years. I thought what they were doing was very prehistoric, because you should optimize your recovery in order to optimize your performance. And a lot of the guys overtrain. You know, it's not like a bodybuilding lifestyle where you go to the gym four or five times a week. It's like every day and sometimes twice a day, and maybe they'll get a day off. But a lot of the people think more is better because you've got so many different types of martial arts that you have to train in. Then you've got your cardio, then you've got your strength training. It's a lot to pack in a week, so overtraining is a big part of it. When you're exposed to a lot of this cortisol, A lot comes from being indoors. So a lot of people, MMA fighters, are training indoors the whole time. You're under harsh lighting. So you'll see behind me, I've got a red incandescent bulb here. That's zero flicker. I'm wearing my blue light blocking glasses to block a lot of the flicker in front of me, okay? The more you get that flicker, the more it raises your cortisol levels. So there's nothing that is solidified, but what science says, it's taken us back to our ancestors. So if we're running from a saber-toothed tiger, let's say we're running through the forestry, you've got the sun shining there, and you're running through the trees, there's going to be a flicker. That raises your cortisol to be alert and run faster, okay? But now we're in a different environment. We're indoors. We've got the flicker from our computers, from our phones, from the light bulbs. You know, it's not natural. So if you get a video recorder and you record the light bulb or you record the screen or the TV, you'll see there's a flicker bit constantly. Our retina is exposed to that and it's raising the cortisol level. So that's one thing that you can do. I know it's very difficult if you're rolling around on the mat or you're getting punched in the face wearing glasses. But whenever possible, you know, you need to kind of block it as much as you can. The other thing is focusing on sleep. People always want something that they can pay for because they believe they're going to get more value from it. It's a lot of the free stuff that is available to us that will help you. And because we're burning the candle at both ends now, there's more demands. We're easier to be contacted by the phone, which is attached to us pretty much. We're not sleeping as much as we once was. So that is when your brain detoxes. That's when your organs detoxify. But if you're not sleeping, you're not going to detox in order to replenish and recover and perform. So that's the other thing. You know, people aren't sleeping early enough. The longer they stay up past dusk, the longer your cortisol levels stay up. Now, that can be very systemic to your heart. It's a lot of stress and a lot of stress on your central nervous system. This is where the woo-woo part comes in now. So we are exposed now to a lot of non-native EMF with our phone, Wi-Fi, satellite, and it's penetrating us constantly. Now, I've got an EMF reader right behind this computer. If I'm holding that EMF reader and I'm holding this phone, the EMF will go all the way up. The number will go all the way up. However, if I take my shoes and socks off and stand outside, that number will go all the way down. Because now this isn't just penetrating into me, it's penetrating through me. So that's why I suggest people earth or ground themselves a good couple of times a day to get rid of a lot of this inflammation. If you watch a movie or read a book out there called Earthing, Earthing the Movie or Earthing the Book, you'll see how you can remove a lot of inflammation out of the body, lower your cortisol levels just by earthing yourself. Now, in the biohacking world, a lot of us rely on biohacks. So there are some shoes out there and trainers called Bahi where you can wear that are earthing trainers. You can run in them, you can hike in them, whatever. So you're constantly being earthed. Of course, the ancestral way is always going to be better, but there are biohacks around that as well. So I'd say those are going to be some of the top pillars. And breath work, meditation, putting yourself in that parasympathetic state, because a lot of us are in a sympathetic dominant state.
You talk about the red light therapy a lot. You got the red light above you now. I saw you on the BioBalance red bed as well, and you stay down there and you lie down there for many minutes. I want to ask you, you spoke about the reasons for this because of the increased oxygen production, healing factors, antioxidant defense, collagen production, circadian rhythm, and muscle recovery. So you've been doing this for several years. Is this completely necessary for your training?
It's not completely necessary. Nothing's completely necessary, but it's like supplements that I take aren't essential, but do they help? Can they help me 3 to 5%? Sure. You know, it all depends on the individual. So I travel about 9 to 10 months of the year, so I need to set my circadian setting all the time because I'm always different in different time zones. Literally just got back from New York yesterday. The day after tomorrow, I fly to Miami. So I'm going to change time zones again. So I'm always having to set my circadian rhythm. And that red light actually helps that. I do the blue light in the morning, like a blue light that is non-flicker. It's like glasses. And then I'll use the red light in the evening. So I never, ever, ever get jet lag. because I'll go to this event this weekend. I have to speak the next morning on stage. With the red light, it actually helps optimize growth hormone and testosterone levels as well. So if you are going to be exposed to red light, it's good. If you want to do it for testosterone levels, we're going to have to shine it on your balls, man, to help there. But of course, you need to have everything else in place, like your sleep. And it helps with collagen and elastin. So if you do have injuries, if you do have inflammation, then you can use localized red light to help penetrate, to help with collagen and elastin production there as well.
Chris, you're pretty sharp. Do you take any cognitive nootropics by any chance?
Yes, I do. But, you know, I make sure that my nutrition's in place. I'm not going to eat anything that is factory farmed raised, that is pro-inflammatory, because if you're having an imbalance in your gut, or your gut integrity is actually compromised, and you're constantly going to inflame gut, that can possibly lead to a chemical imbalance in your brain. So a lot of people think, okay, when I eat, I'm going to be feeding my abs, my pecs, my biceps, I'm going to look good. Not knowing that what you eat obviously feeds your brain. It's another muscle. You know, so you need to optimize your nutrition first. But then, yeah, I will rely on things like alpha GPC, choline donors, so acetylcholine. And then there are some good, you know, huperzine A. I really like huperzine A. And I like paraxanthine. So paraxanthine is a metabolite of caffeine that doesn't have the downstream negative effects of caffeine, such as raised cortisol, such as the diuretic set that you can get from it. And a lot of people are very slow caffeine metabolizers. The half-life on paraxanthine is only about 3 to 4 hours. A lot of people can have paraxanthine and sleep straight away. A lot of slow caffeine metabolizers can't do that. So I like that as one as well. And there's a couple of other peptides that I like. There's one called C-Max and Silanc. They work very well together. So you can do like a couple of drops. It comes in a dropper. Do a couple of drops intranasally on the left and right, and that's a good nootropic cleanser too.
Let's say you're traveling, because you're always traveling, and you don't have your stuff with you. Do you feel the effects of not taking all the stuff that puts you in a good position? Do you feel those effects? Like, do you feel like you're at a lower state of just being?
Yeah, look, I don't rely on these things all the time. So if I'm actually going to do a talk or a podcast, or I'm editing a bit of content, or I really need to be focused or creative, then I'll kind of rely on them a little bit more. But I do rely on my biohacks more when I travel, because a lot of the time I'm going to be in a city that is built up. I'm not going to be able to always earth myself, so maybe I'm going to take my earthing trainers. I know that I'm going to be exposed to a lot of free radical damage, so I'm going to take more antioxidants. I know I'm going to be exposed to a lot of artificial light, so I'm going to wear my blue light blocking glasses or whatever it may be. Whereas at home, where I live on the outskirts of a much smaller town, then I don't feel that I have to do those kind of biohacks as much. But it all depends on the city that I'm in. So for instance, if I ground once a day, that's absolutely fine. If I go to a built-up city, let's say it's Las Vegas or it's Mumbai, I find that I have to earth myself a couple of times, because when I check my sleep scores the following day and my blood glucose response, because I wear a 24-hour blood glucose monitor, I'm more insulin resistant, my HRV has dropped and my sleep quality has dropped. So that's when I kind of usually have to rely on the biohacks more.
When I checked your socials out, you injured the lateral and medial head of your tricep because you did some sick snowboarding incident. So let me know, what did you do? Why were you on a snowboard? And what trick did you do to fuck your arm?
Fuck it up. So I've had a lot of injuries. You know, while I'm talking to you right now, I've got a torn infraspinatus, supraspinatus, ACL and meniscus. Tricep was definitely the worst injury that I had. I never injure myself in the gym. It's usually outside of the gym, because when I'm in the gym, I'm conscious, I'm focused, but I participate in some extreme sports, and I've participated in a lot in the past. With a tricep, I just ragdolled it. So, you know, I love snowboarding. I've been heliboarding in the Himalayas. You know, it's just something that I really, really enjoy. And I was in Grand Targhee. That's it, Grand Targhee. And it was a whiteout. So I'm very, very light sensitive. You know, if I go out in the sun, I have to wear sunglasses. I can't see shit. So I'm very light sensitive, and it was a whiteout. So I couldn't really see a lot of the moguls or the bumps as I was hitting the powder. And I just ragdolled it, and I felt my tricep kind of come off. Like 68% of it came off the bone.
Did you have to stem cell anything?
Yeah, I've had stem cells several times, and that was one of the places that I had the stem cells. So I had to have surgery to reattach it. So they had to drill through my humerus and my ulna to reattach the two tendons that had completely snapped off. And that was more painful than the actual injury, actually, having my bones drilled. And, you know, I gave myself time to recover. And, you know, I knew all the protocol of what I had to do physiotherapy-wise. You know, I did peptides like BPC-157, GHKCU, TB-500. And about a year after that surgery, I still only had about 30% of my strength left, but I was still dealing with about 70% of the pain and discomfort. So then I flew down to Mexico and had stem cells there. And literally 6 months later, now 70% of my strength was back, and I was only dealing with about 20% discomfort. So it totally turned it around straight away. And I've had stem cells on three different occasions now, and they've all been life-changing.
With the stem cells, when I was reading up on it, some people were saying that, you know, things could go wrong and you could get like infections from them or something like that, and to stay away from them. Now, for me personally, I've been training MMA. I've gotten my knees stomped in, my knees torn off from jiu-jitsu positions. So because of that, I'm planning on fixing my knees by getting the stem cells. So do you think I should be worried at all, or do you think that should you go for it?
Well, it's just like anything, isn't it? If you go and take CBD, for instance, it's like the CBD industry is like the Wild Wild West. You don't know what you're getting. You need to make sure that you go to a reputable brand that produce that shows their COAs, their third-party testing, etc. online. So I'll only go to the places that I know that are top-notch, that have their hygiene in place, and usually owned by Americans or people from westernized countries. So, you know, I've had them in Costa Rica, but I'll tell you, going to places like Australia, US, UK, Germany, etc., they're not going to do much for you. You have to go to places such as Mexico, such as Costa Rica, such as Panama, where they can legally expand those stem cells. And the place that I'll go to is CPI in Mexico, and they are the official partners of the UFC. So all the UFC fighters that need stem cells, and there's a lot of them, you know, O'Malley that just fought on the weekend, he's been there, because, you know, that they need to get back in the gym and they need to recover as soon as humanly possible. And they're an official partner. And you know what the UFC are like. They cross their P's and Q's. And they're owned by a couple of guys from within the industry, Scotty Nelson and Ed Clay, who are very, very respected. And they've got a phenomenal clinic there. So it's just like anything. You have to do your homework.
Do you think that sleep is the smallest thing that people can do to totally maximize their health? Like, do you think it's the biggest bang for buck change?
100%. 100%. You know, the one thing that has changed me the most and changes a lot of my clients' performance is the sleep. The one thing that they don't prioritize, because people don't put that much value into it. You know, when people do sleep, it isn't very much quality. You know, I'll get people to wear like a Whoop or an Oura Ring or whatever it may be, so I can see their deep sleep, their effort, you know, the efficacy of the sleep, the REM. And usually the quality is bad. We go to sleep, our brains are racing. Maybe we've had too much caffeine. Maybe we're thinking about deadlines or a podcast the next day or whatever. And we never really get that quality sleep. And when we don't have that sleep, then we're going to be tired. Our reaction time is going to be a little bit slower. We're not going to be as strong. We're going to make bad decisions. We're going to be more emotionally fatigued. So we're going to eat foods that maybe we shouldn't have, because now we need comforted. So you're comforting. So yeah, there's a lot of things that come out from sleep. You can either optimize it and feel really good and perform good, or you don't prioritize it and you feel shit and you perform bad. But it all comes from that recovery. As I always say, it dictates your performance. You know, if you are down in sleep, say 10%, then only expect 90% performance.
Chris, you're an entrepreneur, and all the entrepreneurs out there, they say, you know, the hustle grind set. They say, you know, sleep 4 or 5 hours a night and get up early so you can do more work. We got money to make, right? Now, you got a whole bunch of shit that you need to sort out. You got to go to all these different countries. You got all these businesses going on. So what do you have to say to those people seeing that you're getting your sleep in and you're an entrepreneur?
Yeah, stop watching people like Gary Vee, where they tell you, you know, you've got to hustle, you've got to burn the candle at both ends, you know, sleeping's for wimps, you know. It's just a lot of social media dominance that has influenced people too much. Now, they understand that if you're a teenager, you're in your early 20s, okay, go out there and hustle. Do what you got to do to get ahead. But eventually it will catch up to you. You know, heart disease is the biggest killer in the world. We know that. And that comes from stress. It comes from stress. And if your body's not recovered, then it's going to be under stress. So, you know, what's going to be more important at the end of the day? Is it going to be that Ferrari in the driveway? Is it going to be the mansion that you have? Or is it going to be your health span? Because now you're on a bloody deathbed, or you're in hospital, or you're reliant on other people to take care of you because of those decisions. So I always say, make the decision that's going to heal your future and not harm it.
I wrote down what you told me before, that you were diagnosed with mold toxicity. So how did you get that, and when did you find that out?
So I got it from about 2011, early 2011. I wasn't diagnosed until 2014 by doctor in Oldsmar Clinic, Dr. Spinaug in Oldsmar. So this is in Florida. And I did brain scan, blood, stool, urine, saliva, hair, all the tests that you can think of in order to get this diagnosis. And, you know, like, basically I was sleeping like 3 hours a night. And it was horrendous. It felt like going on a long haul flight in economy every single night. You just couldn't get comfortable. I'd wake up after 30 minutes thinking it's time to get up, but it wasn't. It was only like 10 o'clock at night. And I'd deal with that throughout the night. And I had no idea, no doctor could help me. And it wasn't until I was diagnosed that I realized, okay, this is a protocol that I've got to go through. I had to stay at this clinic for 8 weeks to go through this detoxification process and then continue by myself following. But I got it from staying in an apartment in Mumbai. There was hidden mold there that I was exposed to that I didn't know. You know, a lot of older homes can have it. And if anybody's ever been to Mumbai, it's very humid. It's right by the ocean. You know, appliances don't last that long because of the humidity. And that's where I caught it. I lived in this apartment for over a year, and I picked up that mold toxicity. But people can get it from various things. And like I said, it is prevalent that more than I knew in certain products. You know, we think of coffee as being, it's healthy. You know, everybody drinks coffee, but the amount of mycotoxins and mold spores in coffee beans are unbelievable. So you do have to go for coffees that have been tested for mycotoxins, that are shade grown, that come from a single origin, you know, that haven't been sprayed with pesticides, herbicides, glyphosate, etc., to ensure that you're getting a decent cup. You know, it's the same with grains. So in the US, for instance, there's a very low value when it comes to toxicity in grains. So if, you know, the Europe has a low number. So if Europe says, hey, we don't want these grains, the toxicity is too high, the US will say, we'll have it, because their barrier of acceptance is much lower.
Do you feel the ramifications of all that mold stuff?
Not now, because I've gone through the detoxification protocol. So I had to do IVs with glutathione, ALA, stuff like that every single day for those 6 weeks. Had to do hyperbaric, had to do also colonic hydrotherapy, had to be on a certain diet and take certain supplements and binders to ensure that I could collate a lot of this mold out of me. But now I feel absolutely fine. But for a few years there, it was terrible. I was an asshole to be around. Wasn't a good person to be around because I was so agitated. But I was kind of like going back to that Gary V's / entrepreneurship spirit. I had that mentality. It's like, I'm on 3 hours of sleep, but I'll still out train you. I'll still kick your ass, and I'll still do more than you. Just fucking watch me. And, you know, it was just stupid. You know, I just didn't realize how bad a shape I'd got into. I wrote a few books during that time. And if I read those books now, I can't relate to the person who wrote them.
You've achieved a lot, dude, so far. And you had your first purpose layer back then. And now you've completed that stage of your life. Now you're going into a different stage because you're an older fellow now. So I want to ask you, what do you think keeps you going? And what's the next purpose? What's the next thing that you're trying to achieve in life now?
I need to slow things down a little bit. Like I said, I've traveled about 10 months of this year. I will by the end of this year. You know, now I've just launched a new supplement line. That's going to require a little bit of my time. I'll be hosting some retreats next year, but I hope to travel just a little bit more on my terms as opposed to other people's terms and be a little bit more present, because I'll get to the end of this year and I know what will happen. I'll go, what happened to this year? It's gone just like that. And I need to slow things down a little bit and say no to what I think are opportunities, but understanding that the opportunity is actually to enjoy where I live, to be present, to be able to go out for a run and keep the headphones off and just listen to the sound of my breath and the air, the wind or whatever. You know, I just need to be a little bit more present, because I could feel that I'm one of those people that has so much energy from the moment that I wake up. I have this kind of little bit of anxiety. I got to get this done. I got to move. I got to be faster. And I think I just need to unwind that a little bit more. I just heard that Iron Man is coming back to Boise for the first time in 10 years. So I might just throw my hat in the ring and do an Iron Man again next year.
You've helped a lot of people. So how does that make you feel?
I feel absolutely phenomenal. And I think that's one of the things that gives me the purpose to keep going, because I remember, you know, growing up in Wales when I really got into bodybuilding, you know, all I had was the magazines. There was definitely nobody within my vicinity that was into bodybuilding. You know, I grew up on a farm, nobody that I could lean upon or ask. But now we have that opportunity to engage and interact and take the piss out of athletes or whoever's in our space. So I feel very lucky that I'm in a position where I can help that younger version of me, because there was no help there. So I feel that is the thing that gives me the purpose, because when I hear of someone's transformation and how it's affected their life and maybe their family's life, that's what really feeds me purpose, as opposed to just seeing their before and after picture, because yeah, that's all good and it's great for marketing. Look at my client. They've done this in this amount of time. That's awesome. But when you hear the sacrifices that they made and what success that they got out of it by prioritizing those sacrifices and how it's impacted them, it's unbelievable. Like, I was at an event this week in New York, and you know, these things happen every now and again. This guy came up to me and said how I had literally saved his life. Now, of course, I can't take all those accolades, because he's the one that had blinded himself at the end of the day. But he said, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you write your favorite quote down my thigh and sign it? Because I'm going to go and get that tattooed right now. And he did. Like, 4 hours later, he tagged me on his Instagram. He had it tattooed. Like, that's unreal. Like, who would think of doing that? You know, for me, I'm not deserving of that. But I feel absolutely really lucky and honored and humbled by that. So that gives me the drive and passion to realize, okay, that's an affirmation that I'm doing the right thing. Don't give up.
Out of all the clients, out of all their transformations, can you pick out one that really had an impact on you?
Yeah, for sure. There's a guy called Abu, his name was. He was a Maori. And he had dropped with me over 100 pounds in 1 year, just 1 year. And this guy was going, even though he was married, he had kids, he's such a lovely guy. He had demons. He was really dealing with demons. He was contemplating suicide. He had these repeated suicidal thoughts. And over the duration that we'd created this discipline within, that discipline had translated into so many other areas of his life where he wasn't listening to these demons in his head as much as he was and giving it the time of day, because now he was slowly getting more confidence in himself, and the decisions that he was making a positive impact on others as well, namely his family and his kids. And his kids obviously were learning from observation and seeing what he was doing. He wasn't sleeping in. He wasn't being a lazy bum, because it was his wife that was basically bringing in the money, the bread. And seeing the impact of how that had changed him over the course of that 12 months was something that I'll never forget. You know, he completely turned his life around from, you know, possibly being suicidal, or he was suicidal, to somebody that was absolutely loving life and being a father and getting out and getting a job again, something that he felt that he'd never be able to achieve. I'd say that problem, and that was over 20 years ago. That was over 20 years ago, but I'll never forget that.
So you gave him that discipline. Now that you're doing what you're doing, seeing that you've been disciplined for so long, after a while, don't you feel like you have like a lull period where you just don't feel as disciplined?
I don't really, because I think I've practiced it for so long. You know, in the morning, you know, I don't feel like getting in the ice bath, but I do. Bloody hell, I just thought now I've got to get in the ice bath here now soon, actually. But I think it's just had such a transference effect now. It's just normal. It's normal for me to do that. Like, okay, some days, like yesterday when I just got back from New York, I didn't feel like working out. I didn't feel like going for a run. This morning, I didn't feel like going for a swim. But because I've created the discipline within me, it doesn't matter if my motivation is low. It's become so robotic now and so normal. If someone was to ask me, how do you stay motivated? I don't know if I'd be able to answer them, because it's just become a focus on or reliance on discipline now.
Do you do the sauna and the ice bath back and forth? You do that?
I don't usually do it back and forth. Like I did when I was in New York, because we went to a place called the Bathhouse and we were in there for a few hours. But usually I'll just do the sauna first for like 25 minutes and then jump in the ice bath for a few minutes and that's it.
One thing that I saw that you had that was interesting is you have this tattoo that is like blood red, and you have it like on your vein. So what was the story behind this tattoo? Have you ever told the story?
No, because a lot of people ask me, what do your tattoos mean? They don't really mean much, to be honest with you. I like the look of them. I like the design. I do have some affirmations on there that kind of that are reminders. You know, like I've got pain as a weakness leaving our body on my back. Only one of us walks away down my leg. I've got like the face fear on my hand here. I've got built to endure what the world throws at me here. Fighting to succeed. So I have these positive affirmations that are just reminders more than anything. And with the vein, I just happened to be, I was back in Australia visiting my friends. One of my friends owns Titan Fitness in in Sydney. And we were just on Bondi Beach and there was a tattooist next door. And I thought, well, they can't screw this up. I was like, can you just tattoo this vein? And that's what he did. He literally did it in 15 minutes and it was just instinctive.
There's one thing that I was intrigued about, and it was your TED Talk. So what was that like conducting the TED Talk, and what advice do you have for people about public speaking?
Well, I always hated public speaking. You know, I've never really wanted to be the center of attention, as weird as that may sound. You know, in school, I hated school, because I know that eventually they're going to call you out. You've got to be in front of everybody. I'd always go red. I'd feel flustered. I'd start sweating immediately. And I just hated it. But then I started doing videos for bodybuilding.com back in 2008. So now I started getting a little bit more comfortable in front of the camera over years of doing it. And that kind of led to public speaking. And in all honesty, I feel so much more comfortable speaking in front of people instead of being with people. When I'm with people, I feel a little bit more nervous. I just don't feel like I want to be there. I feel cornered. And a lot of the time, maybe I'm interacting with people that's kind of like maybe this small talk, or they're asking you the same questions. And I just feel a little bit uncomfortable. So when I go and do these talks on stage, I like to just exit and leave straight away. I feel good with that. I much prefer to deliver and give something to people instead of engage and interact with them in person. But I'd say, you know, when it comes to talking, just pretend you're just talking to your family. Pretend you're talking to your best friend or your neighbor. That's all it is. they don't have the right to judge you, just like you don't have the right to judge other people. So they're only going to pick up on you being nervous or uncomfortable, which is going to make you feel nervous and uncomfortable even more so. So you just got to go with the flow. You've got a very short timeline on this earth. Don't give people the power to make them feel, make you feel uncomfortable.
Do you plan on doing another one?
Another talk?
Yeah.
Oh, another talk? Yeah, I've got one this weekend.
What, for Ted?
Oh, not for Ted. Not for Ted. No, Ted, to me, that was just like any other talk. It just happened to be at a university. So, you know, I've spoken at other universities before. Whether it's a TED talk or not, it's just the same thing to me.
Are you working on anything at the moment, like a new book or a new idea that you think needs to be articulated?
No, I've done like 9 books now, and I think I'm done with that for quite a while. I actually prefer, you know, I've just literally launched a supplement company now, 3 months ago. Now the priority will be expanding that. There's a lot of R&D that is going into it because we've only launched with 7 products. Now there's a demand to launch with probably another 15. So that's going to take a lot of time in R&D, which is going to take me probably about another year and a half in my immediate future of focus. So other than the talks, other than the retreats that I've got going on in different places, different countries, that's going to be my focus. And maybe the Ironman as well.
With all of your ideas, I know that you journal. So how do you do that? Because with me, I've got like 3-4 books of just notes and they're unorganized. I don't know what the fuck to do with them. And I go through them and try and fix it up. So what do you do with your journaling? How do you fix that up?
So I will prioritize it dependent on size and goal and timelines. So let's say it's kind of like... God, I'm trying to think of the word now. We have a vision board. It's kind of like a vision board. We create that vision board. You see it every single day, but then you may have your 12-month goals. I won't go any more than 12 months. You have your 12-month goals. You have your 6-month goals. You have your three-month goal, and maybe you have your weekly goals. So obviously, one is going to have a little bit more priority, but the ones that are further away are going to take more time because they're going to be bigger goals. So I always have the smaller ones in front of me, and then the medium, and then larger ones further down the line. But I'll prioritize the smaller ones that aren't so much reactive, but are productive.
So do you kind of link all your goals into, let's say, one goals for the year? Does your first goal lead to that?
Yes. A lot of the time, it'll be eventually towards it, but it's all dependent. So let's say, look, I'm going to India in November. I have some goals that I have to achieve there, but once it's done in November, it's completely done. I take them off the board now, so they won't necessarily lead to the ones that are a year later. You know, some will just eradicate themselves after a couple of months. Just, you know, much like I got a talk this weekend. Okay, so I've had to work on that talk, create the keynotes, the presentation. But once this weekend's gone, that's done. You know, so some of them are just very short term and they'll never be seen again.
When you first started all your business ventures, how long did it take you to find success in your industry, like the first time where you started doing things?
I would say probably about 6 months. And that was my writing gigs, you know, because when I realized that I wanted to write for publications, you know, publications were the big deal back then. There wasn't like websites. You know, I had to buy Merriam-Webster's book on journalistic writing and teach myself how to write because I failed at school. I hated school, hated every minute. So now I had to teach myself how to write to submit content for publications. And during that time, two of my first articles being published in various magazines, it was Planet Muscle, it was Iron Man Magazine, it was Muscle News. There were several magazines, basically, mostly throughout Europe. And then Muscle and Fitness and Flex Magazine in Australia. From that thought process to 6 months later, is that when I got those articles published. And that's when I realized, okay, this is something that I want to do. Because magazines back then used to pay a lot of money. There was no competition. obviously, it's very different. You know, a lot of those magazines don't exist anymore because of Web 2.0. But I'd say, yeah, that was my first initiation. And I never really got into anything for many, many years thinking about the finances, the financial return, what was the ROI. I just did it because I absolutely love it, you know. And if you have a passion and you're able to make a living out of it, then great, that's the bonus. But you have to have a passion for it in order for you to excel at it.
Final question I have for you, Chris, today is a little bit of a hard one, and it's MMA related. So let's say you have two athletes, and the first athlete, their hormone profile is good, but they train infrequently. And the second athlete is that their hormone profile is not so good, but they do train frequently. Out of them, if their body composition, they're the same weight, same body type, just two different people, who do you think would probably get the better results in a week?
Better results in a week?
Or month, whatever it is. Just who do you think would get the better results?
I would say the person, well, it all depends how infrequent and how frequent. So if you're saying infrequent is once a week, but the other person is 7 days a week, then it's going to probably be the person that trains 7 days a week. You know, even though their hormones aren't optimized, yeah, okay, maybe they're not recovering as well, but they're just going to pick up more technique, possibly more power because of that frequency. Now, is it going to be too much? Yeah, probably, but the infrequent of once a week is just not enough.
And if the guy were to do, let's say, the infrequent guy, if we were to do two a week and the frequent guy would do four or five a week, what do you think then?
Aha, yeah, that's getting a little more difficult. I'd still say the four or five a week. I don't think there's just enough frequency, you know, because there's a lot that you can get done even without your hormones being optimized. But I always look at this as the long game. You know, if you look at like a couple of athletes that have been in the game a lot longer than others, think of football, think of MMA, whatever. You know, they've been in the industry for a long time, usually because they're prioritizing their health. Maybe they're focusing on biohacks, etc. You know, look at Andrei Arlovski, for instance. Okay, he may not be the best fighter out there, but the guy's getting long in the tooth, but he's doing something right in order to, like, stay in that game, you know? So that's kind of how I look at it more than anything. You're in there for the long game.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Chris, for your time. Is there any final remarks you want to say to the fans at home before we wrap up the podcast?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me, mate. I really appreciate it. And I've always been a huge fan of MMA. My first magazine that I published was called Caged Muscle because I loved caged fighting, because that's what it was called back then when I started following it. And then Muscle because I loved bodybuilding. But I absolutely love combining the both. And for people out there listening, I'd say the main thing is just don't do everything what you see online, because everybody wants those results yesterday. You know, people don't have the attention span as they once did, so they don't prioritize their sacrifice. They just want the success. Prioritize those sacrifices, man. Success will come.
Follow Chris Gettin on Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, brother.
I'm coming for the kill.